Committee on Healthcare, and I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2660. Do you want to give us a clue about what House Bill 2660 is?
Yes.
That would be nice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And then we'll have some testimony to help out.
Yes. House Bill 2660 is at the request of Representative Andy Olson and Senator Jeff Cruz. The bill is repealing current provisions requiring the Department of Human Services to eliminate or limit Oregon health plan coverage of dental, vision, hospital, and drug services for the 2005-07 biennium. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage. This language was added in the 2005 session in House Bill 3108, and I believe we have a chief sponsor here to speak to the bill, Mr. Chair. Oh, footnote, this does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Great. Thank you. Representative Olson, will you please join us?
Yes, sir.
Your Senate cohort is elsewhere, I take it.
He's hiding, probably.
I don't blame him.
Let me turn off my blackberries and everything else.
Thank you very much. Yes, let's all do that. I'll model that behavior as well. I appreciate your reminder. Please, blackberry cell phones off. It confuses the recording equipment.
Okay.
Even on silent.
Mr. Chair, my name is Andy Olson and members, and I'm state representative from the Albany area. House Bill 2660 repeals House Bill 3108 from the 2005 session. In the closing minutes of the 2005 session, hidden deep within the House Bill 3108, known as the shadow budget, we passed House Bill 3108 that authorized the Department of Human Services to reduce services to critically ill Oregonians who rely on the Oregon Health Plan for their health care. We did not know that we were what we were authorizing, I believe, at that time, but reductions in the hospital and prescription drug coverage, because those decisions were never affirmatively made, nor were they documented anywhere for us. And I could go on and share with you from Section 9 of House Bill 3108 what it provides, but I think that those three subsections there are there for you, so I don't see the sense in reading those to you. But the third point does mention that DHS, Department of Human Services, will adopt rules implementing subsection 1 of this. The staff measure summary of House Bill 3108 indicated that DHS would be required to seek a Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, waiver to implement four changes in Medicaid reimbursement that were assumed in the budget, limiting the number of covered hospital days, limiting the number of prescriptions per month, limiting dental coverage, and eliminating vision coverage. Now, this gets complicated. The budget bill, House Bill 5148 from the 05 session, did not specify these reductions. The budget report accompanying House Bill 5148 referred to a reduction in coverage of dental services and the elimination of coverage for vision services. It also referred to changes in prescription drug coverage. It did not identify the reduction in hospital days and over-the-counter drugs. DHS applied for CMS approval of an amendment to the waiver. CMS did not respond until September 13, 2006. To comply with rulemaking requirements, DHS would not have been able to implement the changes until February 1, 2007. And as my understanding, the date has been moved now to March 1, 2007. As you are aware, the 2005-07 budget is in effect only until the end of this biennium or until the next budget passes, whichever is later. So here's the question posed by Deputy Legislative Counsel Lori Freeman to John Britton from the Legislative Fiscal Office concerning House Bill 3108. Excuse me. What options are available to the 2007 Legislative Assembly with respect to the reduction in health services mandated by House Bill 3108, Section 9? And the response was two. First one was repeal House Bill 3108 prior to March 1st, 2007, and restore $1.6 million general funds to DHS. This will stop the reductions in services for at least 4 months or so months remaining in this biennium. Obviously, this Legislative Assembly will determine through the 07-09 budget the scope of covered health services going into the next biennium. Or two, for the second option, do nothing to House Bill 3108, and DHS will implement the changes in coverage on March 1st, 2007, and those changes will remain in effect at least until the 07-09 budget passes. So I just want to paint a really quick picture for you, too, here. What are the services that were being considered to be removed here? One was to eliminate coverage of routine eye examination and eyeglasses. Two was to eliminate dental services to prevention services necessary to restore teeth, periodontal care, and emergency dental services. Three, to eliminate certain over-the-counter medications, including cold and cough medications, hemorrhoid therapy. That's a tough one for, you know, try to bring a little bit of love in there. Okay. Hemorrhoid therapy and topical steroids. And then four, limit inpatient hospital days to 18 days per year for some groups of beneficiaries. Okay. Inpatient. Got it. Basically, this impacts the folks on the OHP Plus. The average caseload is about 350,000 people a year. The reductions made by House Bill 3108 would impact over two-thirds of that group. And remember, the cost is in the neighborhood of about $1.6 million. I appreciate your time listening to this.
It's $1.6 million for 4 months, right?
That's correct, $1.6. I appreciate your time hearing this bill, and I hope you will strongly consider repealing House Bill 3108 and providing coverage to a lot of folks who need our help with this. I urge you to move this bill on the floor with a due pass recommendation, and quickly. Thank you.
Why don't we hear from your Senate colleague before we have questions? We'll have questions for both of you. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm part of Senator Jeff Cruz from Senate District 1. The voice is someplace else. And I apologize for my the way I'm sounding. We have a doctor in the Senate, but he doesn't instantly cure people. So, colleagues, what I have here in front of me is the Senate floor testimony regarding House Bill 3108 from last session. And just a few highlights when Senator Westland said, this is not my favorite piece of legislation. You know, but basically, when I go through Senator Westland, myself, Senator Ferrioli, Senator Gordley, the big issue is Section 9 of the bill. And we were okay with the other sections, but and the point being that that should have been a legislative decision, not left to the department. And the department made the wrong decision. They absolutely did. It makes no sense on any level. And our conversations have not got the remedy we want, pure and simple. And this should have been a legislative decision last session, not left to the department or to an e-board decision. Because quite honestly, Mr. Chair, the e-board does not necessarily have the time to do all the deliberative work necessary on the decisions they make, especially one like this that affects so many lives and should be a deliberative part of the legislative process. We tried to make that happen last session and were unsuccessful, and which is why, and I want to thank my good colleague for bringing this forward, because this is our attempt to correct the mistake we made late last session, and I know you've done a good job of speaking to the issue, Brad, and if you would want, Mr. Chair, I can give you a copy of the extensive testimony we had in the Senate on this bill. And amazingly enough, it was all Section 9 of the bill. The rest of the bill was fine, but it was all Section 9, and it was both sides of the aisle. And so it was a frustration. This was a bill that came through on August 4th, okay, and which means that the bill may have had full hearings in appropriate House committees. It came to the Senate and went through rules. Okay, so none of the people on the Health Care Committee even had a chance to opine on it except on the floor of the Senate, which is why we had such extensive testimony. Sometimes in August we don't do our best thinking in this body, but it's February, Mr. Chair. We can think clearer now, and I urge you to adopt this bill.
Mr. Chair, before you ask questions, it might help too, I think, if Mr. Bruce Bishop could also come up and share with us a little bit, because it'll give you a little bit more perspective of where we were going and what's happening here. And I do think you'll have a lot better picture painted then as a result.
Bruce hiding back there?
He's over here, sir.
Oh, there he is. You want to move now or you want to wait? Wait.
Ms. Chair, it'd be my desire that you be so persuaded by the two of us that you just pass the bill.
Well, Bruce is on the list. We'll,
okay.
If you need some help, we'll call for any recourse. Yourself. Senator Cruz has taught me a lot about this, so I think he can help. Questions? Well, I have a couple, if I may. We have two issues, right?
We have the $400,000 a month for 4 months in this biennium, assuming we're out on time, and that might happen. And then we have, I assume, $10 million for the equivalent of this for the next biennium. Do you have any sense of how these benefits are looking for inclusion in the 2007-2009 budget? Heard any testimony on that? Ways and Means is still a little mysterious to me. But.
Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, no, and I'm not on a Ways and Means Committee, but I would assume that when we're dealing with a $14 billion general fund budget, which is a 14% increase, $10 million is something that would be relatively easy to find. It's budget dust.
Well, that leads me to the second question. I mean, right now, I understand there's a significant shortage in OHP, and one of the things we'll have is this in the context of other OHP discussions here. If it comes down to the question of $10 million for adding back these benefits or $10 million for adding, say, new people to OHP standard, how would you come down on that if we get into that kind of a Hobson's choice?
You're thinking about, Mr. Chair, just basically removing the benefits for somewhere in the neighborhood of about 260,000 people. Is it? I mean, versus whether we have the dollars for that. Is that my understanding?
Yeah, I don't know how this budget is going to come down. But my question is, if we're dealing with the last $10 million, how do you weigh removing these benefits? Some of which can be critical, some of which might be viewed as less critical, compared to spending that $10 million bringing new people under OHP. Because I think we're going to be in that kind of a hot choice.
Yeah. Well, I believe in consistency myself, but again, you know, as we move forward into this, I guess we're going to have to kind of wait to see how it all pans out toward the end at this point.
Ms. Chair, I think it's more basic than that. I mean, this is what we're talking about is restoration of funds that were part of an agreement, and it's about a credibility of us to live up to agreements we made, and it's also, although it was left to the E-Board. The legislative record was clearly intent or very explicit on what was intended, and there was a violation of that by the department. And so this isn't a matter of whether we fund this or that. It's a matter of we made an agreement. We should stick to our agreement, and that's what this bill proposes to do.
Any other? Well, thank you very much, Bill. Thanks for coming over, Senator. Representative, thanks for
thank you.
Raising this important issue.
CF5.
Representative. CF5, okay. There is, I mean, if I might just comment for both of you, it's very clear. One of the things we're going to have to do is figure out what we're going to do about OHP, and this is going to be an important piece of that discussion, I think, because there are issues that aren't budget dust.
Ms. Chair, if I could, just one more comment, and that was an irreverent comment, quite honestly, but I do think it's not just the public's faith in government, but it's the partners we have in delivering services and their faith in government and their ability to count on us when we make an agreement with them. And I think that's a fundamental question that's at stake here. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay. Mike Shortcliffe? Come on. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, yeah, I skipped one. Deborah Loy, why don't you come up as well? Your name in red made it hard for me to see, I guess.
Hello.
Ms. Loy, why don't you start?
Thank you, Chair Greenlick and members of the committee. I'm Deborah Loy, and I'm representing Capital Dental Care. We're a dental care organization with the Oregon Health Plan. And I am for this bill and would like to just give a little bit of history as it relates to the dental plan that I represent. At the close of the 05 session, when the session ended, we were given this budget bill to try to respond to with a very quick turnaround time in order to get the submission to CMS for them to then weigh in on the dental portion of these four benefits that were included in this budget bill. There was no methodical, necessarily, way that we tried to come up with the definitive amount that was set for us to reduce the OHP Plus. We did the best job we could in a very short turnaround without using the Health Services Commission or a clinical review process in order to make those decisions. We simply tried to ante up whatever we thought could possibly meet that particular and cause the least amount of injury to this particular population of people. As you have already addressed, there was no response from CMS for a long period of time, and now it leaves us a very compressed time period to implement these particular budget or these particular dental package reductions to the adult population in plus. There are benefits that we put on that laundry list that clinically, if you're looking at a budget bill and you're having to do the best you can to deal with a budgetary process, made sense to us to do, but in the long scheme perspective are not ones necessarily that make good clinical sense. For an example, a diabetic elderly patient who has a 10-year-old non-functioning denture that can't be repaired wouldn't have a replacement denture benefit to aid that person's mastication ability for diet. Those are benefit package reductions, again, that in the scheme of responding to a budgetary shortfall were things we put on the list, but were not things that my plan would put on the list currently in light of clinical review of that. I have a panel of 400 participating dentists statewide, many of who are community providers. I am in urban and rural areas, and the providers that I deal with need to be able to provide an ethical package of benefits, and I know there are things included in these dental benefit reductions that would make it very difficult for them to do that. And also, to the on and off, there's a very small period of time left when, for this particular budget reduction, if it goes to the end of the biennium or when the new budget is passed. It is very disruptive for providers to try to implement things on a short-term duration basis as this would be presented as such now.
Thank you. Any questions? Could you outline specifically what's been rescinded?
What benefits have been taken off? They would no longer have, as I said, denture replacement benefits. It would strictly be if their teeth were being newly extracted, they would have a denture benefit, but not to replace any existing dentures if they have them. Periodontal services, surgery services were removed. Crown coverage was removed.
Molar root canals.
Molar root canals were also removed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Shercliffe. I'm a dentist and president and CEO of the Advantage Committee. Representative Grimnick, Representative Richardson, and members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak before you. I don't normally like to come and speak in opposition to one of my fellow dental care organizations, but in this case I have to respectively do that, not because I don't think the procedures are necessary or something that we shouldn't be covering. It's just that in a situation where we have limited resources, I feel like that it's better to ration procedures than is to ration people. Representative Grimnick brought that question up to Senator Cruz and Representative Olson. Well, if we had to make a choice between $10 million, and I've heard $10 million called budget dust, but to dentistry, it's a difference between having a plan and not having a plan. As Representative Richardson knows, this last legislature, the budget came proposed by the governor to eliminate all adult dental procedures, and we went through a very arduous process to see if we couldn't keep that survived. Some DCOs would say we didn't have time to thoroughly and adequately consider what cuts could be made, but having done this since 1994, being a dentist of over 30 years, my plan spent considerable time looking at those services that we felt would be of less priority, especially in light of the fact of some of the things that we've learned about treatment of pregnant women and children, early childhood caries. What we've learned in Klamath Falls through a cooperative effort of the health department, of the state of Oregon, the health department of Klamath Falls, and I'm sorry, I'm kind of summarizing my testimony. It's three pages. I'm sorry I'm not following along with it because I know it like the back of my hand, and I got started in light of some of the other testimony.
You'll have your written testimony as
well. Yeah, we have your written testimony. The places in green and yellow are where we're at. That's what that's there for. And the numbers on it are how many people are in those counties. If you look at the second sheet, it shows how many people are in the different counties on the Oregon Health Plan in the different DCOs as well as the different categories of coverage. And then the first page is just so interestingly enough, the fellow who was one of the founders of water fluoridation died, and it was in the obituary paper on Saturday. And if you read closely in there, it shows that up to 70% of tooth decay can be reduced if we water fluoridation. But I'm not here to testify that because we all know way more about that than we need to, and very frankly, can do almost the same thing by using fluoride every day on your toothbrush. So I don't want to get in trouble with the Dental Association for saying that, but the truth is you can. And so I'm not here about that. What I put those in there for, there are three things that have been shown to reduce tooth decay in poorer citizens. One is a dental home. The second one is a daily use of fluoride. And the third one is case management and home visits where somebody goes in and helps folks who don't know how to address the care systems that we have in being able to do so. People who are able, and so what I would rather do, if you have a choice for some extra money, rather than have you spend that money on these are not preventive procedures that were eliminated; these are restorative procedures. I would rather you spend the money for more care for pregnant women and kids through age 12 through the study that we've been doing down in Klamath Falls, which results in 2-year-olds with no decay. We had 800 pregnant women who started in this program, of which a little less than 500 went through the program, and after 3 years, we only have 177 left. And the reason a lot of that is because of the folks, for various reasons, one of which is alcohol and drug issues, and there's not enough treatment money for that and enough caseworkers. Is one of the things you know that's been cut over the last legislative sessions is case management. And we would rather have you spend the money on case management than on dental procedures that we feel like as a state maybe not be as high priority. Out of those 177 pregnant women or pregnant mothers that we have a kid, we have 30 now that have made it to 3 years old or 2 years old, and not one has had a cavity. Mind you, this is in a population of Medicaid children who are 100% at risk for tooth decay. And we know that it works. But the main thing I'm here to talk about is the fact in rural Oregon, there aren't enough of us to go around for all kinds of dentistry, let alone to go around for those the dentists that will participate in the Oregon Health Plan. My plan, which has over 250 dentists in rural Oregon, is one of the few plans that's out there that the dentists are willing to see anybody who's poor. And we feel like, at least out there, if we have a choice between doing a denture and doing a care on a pregnant woman and child, then we feel like that we have to prioritize things. And don't get me wrong, I do not think that these are unnecessary services. I really believe they are. It's just that where do you put the money and the resources? This is the first legislature that I've been to where I'm actually asking for less. Every legislature that we've been here, we've been hoping to survive in dentistry. And thankfully, for a lot of the work that's been done, and for a lot of you that are sitting in front of me here today, we're not here asking that. I'm just afraid that when it comes time to prioritize the money at the end, that we may misspend it. And I would urge you to implement this and continue it on, because where my dentist practice, I would rather ration procedures than people. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for coming over the mountains to testify today.
It was kind of dicey today. It was a three-hour trip.
Carefully going back.
Chair, it was a three-hour trip normally takes 2:15. It was 3 hours and 15 minutes. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, questions for either of these witnesses? Well, thank you both. You may yet have the opportunity to come back and ask for more before this session's over.
All right. Thank you very much.
Cindy Becker.
Hi, Cindy. Sorry you didn't stay the other day.
Oh, I am.
We got your testimony.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Cindy Becker, and I'm the executive director of COHO, which is the Coalition for a Healthy Oregon, which is comprised of 11 of the Medicaid managed care plans in the state. The plans serve more than 265,000 Oregon health plan clients. That's both standard and plus, and about 60% of those individuals enrollees are children. We are urging you to support House Bill 2660. I'm not going to go over what's in 2660, what it's repealing, because you already know that. But the reality is that these reductions were purely cost-cutting measures that were made during the time of the budget crisis last session. They, as I understand, are not included in the department's 07-09 budget. They're one-time, four-month reductions. In other words, they weren't undertaken because there's a problem with the federal government. They weren't undertaken because the a problem with these programs or with a problem with client utilization. They were taken purely for financial reasons. Implementation of these reductions would negatively impact the clients that are served through the Oregon Health Plan, both in terms of the care they receive. We know what happened from 2003 to 2007. We saw a significant reduction in the number of enrollees, particularly in standard, and much of that was the result in the confusion about which benefits were offered when. Mental health, chemical dependency benefits were on, they were off, there were issues with co-payments. This population who is served in OHP is a vulnerable population, and changing benefits, particularly one time for a short period of time, adds to the confusion. The other issue that would be detrimental is essentially it's going to probably cost the plans more to do this one-time cut from their business and data systems than it would be the savings that would be actually be accrued. All the plans, and not just the plans in Coho, but all the managed care plans are going to have to change printed materials, are going to have to change systems. And when we discussed this at one of our meetings, some of the plans said, you know, I'd rather pay for the reductions that than have to implement them because it's going to cost my plan more to implement them. So it's that dollar and penny thing. I'm not sure which way it goes, but you spend a dollar, I think, to save a penny. So regardless, it's going to hurt clients, real people, and secondarily, it's not going to save money for the plans because it's going to cost them more to implement. So I urge that you support House Bill 2660 and repeal the reduction in benefits. Thank you.
Thank you, Sydney.
How much would it cost an average plan to eat the benefit?
Chair, I was hoping you wouldn't ask that question because we didn't get down to that cost. It was just really many of the plans just said for me, for each one of them, it was just going to cost more than it would save, but I don't have those exact figures. I'm sorry.
So if we don't rescind it, they might just go ahead and provide the benefits?
No, they would not go against their contract. They would have to go with what the contract said, and with the changes, it's just they're going to have to eat the cost of that.
Any questions?
What
do you think?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Because I'm new to this process, and so we're looking at four areas of service that have been cut, are going to be cut in the last 4 months.
Representative Maher, actually, they are scheduled to be eliminated beginning March 1st. However, it's my understanding the department actually has to give a 30-day notice to clients, so I'm not even sure they could actually be implemented March 1st, but it would be 4 months beginning March 1st, and they are not included in the 07-09 budget.
So
they are not included?
It's my understanding that they are not carried forward.
Okay, so the basic notion is they're dead March, April, whenever.
Correct.
On an ongoing basis.
But
I'm sorry, that the reductions do not carry forward. So it's a one-time, four-month reduction, and then the services come back, the benefits come back.
And that's in the governor's budget?
That's my understanding, yes, sir.
I thought it was the...
Yeah, I'm not sure that's true, but we'll get some more testimony.
Okay.
Bruce? I confirmed that with Bruce Bishop as well. His understanding as well that there was just a one-time cut.
4 months, or now 3 months, as you think.
Correct.
Okay. Then, well, okay. So a very fundamental question, and the previous presenter made that point: was is it better to reduce services and add more people? And this is. I'm not asking necessarily specifically to this bill. Reduce services and add more people, or have a higher benefit level and reduce the number of people that you offer it to.
Chair Greenlake, Representative Maher. Is it Maher? Did I say it right?
Maher.
Sorry, members of the committee. One of COHO's platforms is universal coverage for all Oregonians. So with that in mind, however, benefit reductions can certainly happen. It's, you know, the lesser of two evils. But I think what we would say is if they're going to happen, they need to be done in a rational, thoughtful, contextual manner. These were done to plug a budget hole.
Okay, thank you.
Sir, just a comment.
Mr. Chair,
this is news to me because I was under the impression that they would be cut and that they were not going to be restored. And so just a question of did it finish the biennium or did it happen before? And so that's
my impression as well. We'll have some more testimony.
If we move this out of here, it goes to Ways and Means. The question is, will they find the $1.6 million? In this year's budget, although I'm not sure how that's going to happen specifically. But
it'll be a rebalance, probably.
Yeah. Sydney, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gary Allen?
Chair Greenlake, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. I'm Gary Allen, for the record, and I'm a dentist. I'm here on behalf of Willamette Dental Group to speak in favor of this bill and its quick passage and implementation to remove this from this state of limbo. My prepared comments would essentially be a duplication of what you've already heard from prior testimony, and in particular Deborah Loy. Obviously, there is some confusion, and maybe I'm confused as well, but it was our understanding that these cuts were going to be for the remainder of this biennium, and then we would return to the package as previous. So from a practical standpoint, speaking on behalf of the providers that are trying to deliver this care, you put them and you put us in a position of essentially three different benefit packages for the remainder of this biennium. And for all practical purposes, from our group, we would be faced with the difficult decision of, yes, do we implement them, confuse our providers, especially considering that appointments are several weeks out. So you're going to have patients that are going to be have been appointed with the understanding that they're going to receive a benefit when they show up for that appointment. In fact, that benefit would no longer be covered. However, if they had waited till the next biennium, then it might be restored. So I think that's obviously something that needs to be cleared up. Addressing the question that you posed, is it better to ration, and was well articulated by my colleague, Dr. Shercliffe, is it better to ration benefits or ration people? That is a dilemma, and I think the spirit of the Oregon Health Plan is that certainly we want to cover the most people at a benefit level that makes sense with an emphasis on prevention. And so I can't really argue with some of the issues that were well stated by Dr. Shercliffe. However, I would like to say that if faced with that dilemma, if we can get some clarity on this, and if indeed we're going to be going into the next biennium with a reduced benefit package, then what we would like to do as DCOs is to address that issue in a good faith effort, as I think we've always done with the legislature and with DHS, to come up with a benefit package, if it's going to be reduced, that can be supported by all of the DCOs that are providing these services, rather than to carry these cuts, which we think were hastily arrived at in face of a budget reduction. We would much prefer to go through it as a group and as a coalition and then come to agreement, and then as we continue forward, if it must be a reduced benefit package in exchange for covering more people, that it would be at least something that we could all support. Thank you. We do urge you to pass this House Bill 2660.
Any questions?
I do have a question. And let's assume, though, for a moment that all these cuts will be restored on July 1st. Something I'm not quite willing to assume yet, but if it was, how difficult would it be, like, for example, with that diabetic patient that's been suffering with dentures that haven't worked for a long time, to wait till July 1st to replace the dentures?
How difficult would it be?
But how complicated would it be to say, okay, come back on July 2nd?
Well, I think the complication would be mostly from an access standpoint, that getting that appointment in the first place was probably difficult because we don't have a lot of providers out there that deliver these services, a lot of them that provide services to OHP patients. So the wait may not be to just July 1. It may be, in fact, how soon can you get them in after that? That would almost be a case-by-case basis. From a standpoint of the impact on that particular patient, it probably would be minimal as far as any suffering that might be necessary, if that's what we could be assured, that they would be restored. But for all practical purposes, we probably would not, speaking for my plan, we wouldn't cancel that patient. We would most likely provide that service.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Where are we? Ellen Lowe. After Ellen Lowe, we have Ellie Jenny and Bruce Bishop. Is there anybody else that wishes to testify?
I'll have to go down and leave the chairs for Ellie
Jenny. Good. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Ellen Lowe, legislative advocate for the Oregon Law Center and for the Oregon Food Bank. And the last time I testified on this particular subject. It was before a Senate Rules Committee, if I remember correctly. Today, I really would like to acknowledge the leadership of Representative Andy Olson and his colleague, Senator Jeff Cruz, and their responsiveness in having this legislation drafted so we can erase from our statutes Section 9 of House Bill 3108. I also need to recognize the work of Dr. Bruce Goldberg and the governor with Health and Human Service Secretary Leavitt in giving us assurance that the waivers that we sought and received will not have to be implemented. Now, I truly believe that you can and you should erase Section 9, but I respectfully request that you not erase from your memory the litany of events that brought us this debacle. This significant change in benefits was not done by a rational review of condition treatment pairs as we have within the Oregon Health Plan. It was never reviewed because of things that happened within the subcommittee that Representative Richardson chaired or in the Substantive Health or Human Services Committees. It was a classic example of really creating a box and there was no door. I recall that legislators were told that the legislation was a must if adjournment was to take place. And providers, consumers, advocates were told the same thing. And so really what I want you to do now is to reflect on the litany that was shared with you by Representative Olson and weigh that possible delay in adjournment against the costs, the outcomes of its passage. There was considerable staff time involved in preparing the waivers, and then the staff time in working with providers, with managed care plans and consumers about implementation, and then those of us who serve as volunteers with many of these organizations in somehow looking at how we might live with what was being decreed. And perhaps most important to me, the fear that was there among many consumers about the pending implementation with their loss of benefits. Now, this session, I think that as I observed the subcommittee on ways and means, it seems to be, in spite of some of the speed in this session, that they are given the time to really ask some perceptive questions. You have experienced and very able LFO officers. You have this subcommittee, your full committee, the House Human Service and Women's Wellness Committee, your staff, and then also the committees on the Senate side. And I've watched the linkages, the number of joint meetings that you're having. I encourage you to maintain the linkages you are establishing and to maintain this standard for deliberation as your performance measure. I truly believe that the outcome will be worth it, and that then within the context of the total health plan and all those condition treatment pairs, you will be able to make some sound decisions. So I ask you to give yourself time and establish that as your performance measure, and I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
And I have a couple, as you might guess. In terms of full disclosure, you also represent the Oregon Association of Hospitals.
Not on this issue. And I do function as a community advocate. I also have two other clients, Children First and United Way of the Columbia Willamette. My participation, Mr. Chair, on this subject in the last session was with the two groups that I initially mentioned. And
the reason that I raise that issue here is not simply because I've been kidding you about it for the last 3 months. But
yes, that's why I wore pink today instead of black.
But because if we really are talking about 3 months of benefits, and I understand the angst of the health plans of the DCOs in dealing with a change of benefits and what they do with it. Eliminating routine eye examination and eyeglasses, limiting dental services to prevention, services necessary to restore teeth, periodontal care, and emergency dental, and eliminating some of the over-the-counter medications don't really seem very draconian if we really are talking about 3 months of coverage. But the fourth thing that we haven't heard any testimony about is limiting inpatient hospital days to 18 days a year. And I don't know whether that year starts on March 1st or when that year starts, but that could have significant effect on hospitals, because we know you're not talking about limiting hospital days to 18 days a year. We're talking about limiting payment to hospitals for 18 days a year. Am I reading this correctly in terms of what seems to be, if we are only dealing between March or April, as Cindy suggested, and July 1st, I mean, this does not seem like the world's coming to an end.
Mr. Chair, I'm not prepared to respond, nor authorized to respond in terms of the hospitals. The other part of this, I would remind again, there needs to be a 30-day notice. And so you would end up probably having 2 months of lapse. And I heard you mention in your questioning of some of the other witnesses about that what's in the governor's budget may not be what's actually in the legislative approved budget. But I would hope, and that's why I mentioned the connections with the other committees, that what you accomplish really is going to be not just looking at vision or that limited part of dental, but be looking at it in terms of the context of the whole Oregon health plan, because this really in many ways was a violation of the statutory charge to the Health Services Commission, where I served for too many years perhaps, in the way we were supposed to go from the most important to the least important.
Thank you very much, Ellen. I mean, I just think, when I think of what's really catastrophic is losing 80,000 people out of a OHP standard. I mean, that's draconian. And those things worry me a lot. But
Mr. Chair, that worry is shared by, I think, a great many of us, and that's why we are there on a number of other issues for you as well. Thank you.
Ellen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I always love hearing you. Ellen Jenny, and we need to get the chair set up down there. Welcome, Ms. Jenny.
Oh, thank you. Representative Greenlick and members of the committee, my name is Hazel Jenny. And I'm here in support of House Bill 2660. I think as a person who would be personally impacted by this, that, you know, it may not mean anything because I may not have a need during that time, but at another time it may mean, it may have an impact on me. I would like to say that I have been in the hospital at times more than 18 days at one time. And so it does concern me that if that were an issue, that I'm not sure the hospital would kick me out, but at the same time, it doesn't set a very good precedent for the state interacting with the hospital and the hospital wanting to care for OHP people. That's what my concern is. You know, as far as that. And I think in regard to cost, that it would, that it's going to cost more if some of these people that might have a impacted molar end up in the emergency room, and that could likely happen. Whereas if they could go to the doctor to see, you know, have it taken care of there before it got to be that bad. So I don't think, you know, I understand your concern about people not being on the health plan, but the folks who are in the PLUS plan have significant physical chronic needs. It's not things that we are proud of or wish we had, but that's just the way life is. And so I would appreciate your understanding that if I were able to not be on the health plan, boy, I'd love it, you know, but I haven't been given that choice. So I just wanted to speak up for the consumers who this bill represents rather than just the professional people who pay for the bill or who, you know, represent other interests in this. And I didn't have anything written out, but I did want to comment. So thank you for your time.
We very much appreciate you being here on behalf of the consumers. Questions?
Mr. Chair, this is a rare opportunity for me. Thank you for coming today. I'm going to ask you a question, and it really has to do about the fundamental issues that we're dealing with in healthcare reform, and that is that it's obvious that we can't give everybody everything that they think they need. And so, from your perspective, how do you think we should approach this issue of looking at what is appropriate care in appropriate circumstances? I don't want to put you on a spot, but I just thought you may have thought about this.
Well, I think the biggest thing I would consider in any discussion is that you bring the consumers in also. Is the professional people, the doctors, the legislatures, and the other folks, you know, the hospital representatives and the politicians, those folks all get together to try to decide what's best for consumers without including the consumers. So I, as one consumer, I don't really know that I could answer your question because I do have significant health care issues that I wish I could pay for myself, but unfortunately that's not the case, and so I'm grateful for the Oregon Health Plan. I was even more grateful for what was the Medicaid program before the health plan came along, because at that time we didn't have to jump through all the hoops that we now have to jump through to get care with the Oregon Health Plan. So I'm trying to live with the benefits of the health plan, as are other people with chronic care issues. But I don't know with each person it's going to be different with what is most important. But I do believe that dental is important because, you know, if you got a toothache, that affects everything. I had one recently, and I was able to go to my dentist, and he was able to help me with it. But, you know, if I hadn't been able to go, I don't know what would have happened other than I would have gone to the emergency room. Excuse me. And then they probably would have had to call in a dentist to do something there. I'm sorry that didn't really answer.
Actually, you did answer my question. Thank you.
Yeah, I too, we worry about this as we're thinking about, it's easy to think of a population of 350,000 people or a population of 100,000 people and not realize that that's made up of 350,000 individuals. Different people who have different needs and different requirements. And I think you're right. I mean, hearing that frequently is probably a very good thing for us.
Yeah, and I believe those people with all those different issues appreciate that too. And your program would be better served that way also. So, thank
Any
you.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, can I just make an observation?
Please.
We've had a lot of folks come and testify today that have been longtime advocates, and have Ellen being one of them. She's been a part of the discussion in Spillane ever since I've been here, which has been a little while. And I want to thank her for her commitment, as well as Ellen Lowe's. I know they've been very diligent about bringing to our remembrance those that are most vulnerable in our society. So, Ellen, thank you. Good to see you.
Thank you, Representative Minnis. Mr. Bishop?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Bishop, appearing on behalf of the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems in support of House Bill 2660. Your staff is passing out to you a copy of the written testimony of the Hospital Association, and I won't read that testimony to you because you're able to read it. This bill would repeal Section 9 of House Bill 3108 from the last session. That section directed the department to adopt rules to carry out the legislatively approved budget. If you read House Bill 3108, you will not find in it any mention of dental, vision, prescription drug, or hospital benefit reductions. The bill didn't talk about those specific reductions. In 2005, the DHS budget assumed four budget reductions would be taken. Those four reductions were not specified in the budget bill or in any other legislative enactment. Three of the budget changes were mentioned in the budget report that accompanied the budget bill. But reductions in hospital stays and over-the-counter drugs were not even mentioned in the budget report. Those reductions, the reductions in over-the-counter prescription drugs and limited hospital stays, were mentioned only in a staff measure summary, in a staff measure summary that accompanied House Bill 3108. Every staff measure summary that you see that accompanies a bill has a statement at the bottom of it that says, "This summary has not been adopted or officially endorsed by action of the committee." But the only place in the legislative record where the reduction in hospital benefits was specified was in a staff measure summary to House Bill 3108. That's the reason I believe legislative counsel was probably asked by the Legislative Fiscal Office what they should do to address that issue. Legislative counsel, as Representative Olson has previously testified, identified two options: either the repeal of Section 9 or no action allowing the reductions to continue. We believe that House Bill 2660 is an appropriate legislative response today to the issues out of the 05-07 legislatively approved budget. We think it's appropriate for you to reverse those decisions that were never specified, that were assumed, and that were only mentioned in an unofficial staff summary from our perspective, it's almost less about the cuts themselves than the process that was used. And as legislators, you need to know what the decisions are that you're making on every bill, including budget bills. The reduction in hospital coverages that was in House Bill 3108 was never discussed in a budget committee hearing, was never described in any legislative documentation except for a staff measure summary. If it's your conclusion that budget reductions are necessary, that benefit reductions or population reductions should be taken, we believe that the legislature and its committees should debate and decide those issues. That's not what happened with this reduction, particularly the hospital reduction in 2005. For now, Oregon hospitals and the patients they serve urge you to approve House Bill 2660 to correct that budget process mistake from last session. We urge you to make sure that budget decisions this session are carried out in public and with legislative awareness of the consequences before votes are taken in the House and Senate. Thank you very much for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you, sir. Question, Mr. Bishop?
Bruce, if I may, how much of that $400,000 a month, the estimate I assume we heard, would be hospital expenditures? Do you have any idea, roughly?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that, my recollection is that out of what was approximately a $5 million reduction that was approved last session, hospitals had about one-fifth of that, or about $1 million. But that would have been over a substantially longer period of time in which the reductions were expected to occur. My understanding now is that the hospital share of the reduction that's being talked about is about $100,000. I believe that's the total impact.
Of 1.6 million?
Yes. So most of the reduction occurs in the vision, dental, over-the-counter prescription drug reductions that are also part of it. Part of the problem with that, though, is the timing of the cuts now. If the cut were to be implemented April 1st, which I believe is probably about the earliest the department could do it, I assume that the reduction would apply to hospitalizations and admissions occurring after April 1st. And then it would only apply to those admissions that had a length of stay longer than 18 days. So that number would probably be relatively small in April, May, June, but it would extend. If it extended into the subsequent biennium, you would have admissions in June, for example, that might end up being a stay longer than 18 days, and payment would not be received beyond the 18th day for that care.
But since about 80% of the population is in fully capitated health plans, most of this reduction would be a reduction in capitation for those time periods rather than actual reduction, I assume.
I believe that this reduction was anticipated only in the fee-for-service side of the budget.
Fee-for-service side?
Yes.
For
the hospital limitation. And the reason I have to be cautious about what I believe
that's
to be the
case... That's why it's only $100,000.
Yeah. Is because this issue has never really been discussed, in a public forum. So my impression is it's a relatively small residual amount, at least in the 05-07 biennium. I think for the full biennium, if an 18-day limitation were to be adopted, it would probably have something more on the order of a $2 million reduction for a full biennium.
Thank you, Representative Maurer.
Representative,
I know I had secret information here that you had a question.
Yes, I do. who came up with the 18 days?
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, I believe that that idea came out of the agency as one of the reduction strategies that they could implement. But that reduction strategy was never described to the Ways and Means Committee. It was never described to the Legislative Budget Committee. It was never discussed in public or analyzed in any budget document that I've ever been able to get my hands on. And I don't think the agency really thought that it would get approval in the legislative process. I think that's where the idea originated. It's an old idea. Before the Oregon Health Plan was adopted, Oregon used to administer an 18-day limit on hospital stays, just as a crude way of limiting hospital payments. For some reason, after 10 or 15 years of operation under the health plan, somebody decided that they could revive that proposal.
Yeah, I thought that was just somebody with a sense of history.
Health care has changed.
Oh, really?
Since that probably was in place. So it's interesting. Thank you.
Anything else? Bruce, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Are there any other witnesses who would like to testify? We'll close the public hearing, cogitate on what we heard today, and maybe hear from DHS on this. I think there are some questions that some of us have that we can best be answered by DHS. And I thank you all very much for testifying this. And Representative Olson, he's still hiding? No, he's gone.
He's asleep now.
I thank you for bringing this to our attention. I'm going to open a work session, if I may, on House Bill 2493. We just barely have a quorum left, but what I would like to ask you to do is to move 2493 over to the full committee, and I don't intend to work it in the full committee, at least not for some time, but I'd like to move out of here for housekeeping purposes back into the full committee, and if that's not a problem with you, I would appreciate a motion to move 2493 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Sure.
Yes.
I move House Bill 2493 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Any discussion? Any objections? I don't need to take that away.
Your call. If you want to identify who's excused, though.
Yes. Let's call roll.
Representative
Kong. Excused.
Representative Menace.
Excused.
Vice Chair Cannon.
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Greenlee.
Aye. And I'll carry the bill if it gets brought back up. Thank you very much. I close the work session on 2493. And unless there's any other business to be brought before the committee, the reminder of yes. We are going to join the Senate committee at 5 o'clock. I assume the members who are here are the only ones who are going to be doing that.
I will be unable to make it tonight.
No,
Chair.
Pizza for you tonight.
I'm sorry, no pizza for me.
Ah, okay. And we stand adjourned.